This is the crisis point.
Welcome to the Crisis Point podcast, where, like Chesterton, we discuss nothing except for politics and religion, because, well, there's nothing else to discuss. I am your host, Michael Warren Davis, the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Philip F. Lawler, the director of the Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture at the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Thank you for joining us. The latest wave of iconoclasm that is sweeping the nation, ostensibly political in its origins, has now become openly anti-religious and specifically anti-Catholic. Besides the obvious examples of St. Junipero Serra, which we'll go into, last week, a statue of Mary outside the Cathedral Prep School and Seminary in Queens, New York, had the word idol spray-painted top to bottom, which is not a Black Lives Matter thing. It's not even a white Jesus thing, if you remember that incident with Sean King. That sounds to me like a very particular sort of Protestant or Muslim thing. Interestingly, also, Phil, and as you know, the protests against the statue of St. Louis in St. Louis, Missouri, is being led by Muslims who believe that King St. Louis was an Islamophobe. He was a crusader, certainly. And so his statue must be brought down out of respect to Muslim Americans. So this is very quickly shifting from a political to a religious thing, isn't it, Phil?
It certainly is. The campaign against the statues of St. Junipero Serra was the first obvious indication that this whole iconoclastic orgy had taken on an anti-Catholic bent. Why would you pick him out of all the people of whom there are statues that could be attacked? And there's one other you didn't mention yet in Boston, where a statue of Our Lady was defaced. Someone tried to set it on fire with significant damage being done. Mm. It's interesting to me, these attacks on Catholic statues, Catholic saints, and particularly attacks on the Virgin Mary. That's something that's close to Catholics specifically.
Now, I wonder if this wasn't fundamentally an anti-Catholic movement from the beginning. I mean, modern iconoclasm is, of course, grew out of the Protestant Reformation. The Eastern Church, the Orthodox, also faced a wave of iconoclasm, sort of in one of its own foundational kind of quasi-Reformation moments. So the destruction of statues, I think it was only a matter of time before it came back to its roots as an anti-Catholic movement.
That's an interesting thing, because I guess it came into our consciousness just a few weeks ago when it was Black Lives Matter and it was Confederate statues that were on the line. But then very quickly, it shifted, not just Confederate statues, but basically any statues. And of course, another moment, a tipping point, no, if you forgive the pun, is going after the statues of Christopher Columbus, who symbolizes Christianity coming to the Western Hemisphere, among other things. He is, of course, a dead white male. He certainly had nothing to do with the American Civil War, but he does fit into that category of a Catholic, someone promoting Christianity, bringing Christianity to these shores, and resented for that reason.
If you actually listen to what people are talking about when they talk about St. Junipero Serra, these protesters, one of the things that they protest is that by introducing Catholicism into the West Coast, he destroyed the indigenous culture. By indigenous culture, they obviously mean paganism. And so, weirdly, and this, I'm not making this up, I'm not exaggerating this, weirdly, a large part of the reason that Junipero Serra is hated is because he converted the Indians away from their sort of primitive pagan religion. which is totally bizarre because these aren't pagans themselves that are mostly protesting. They're atheists. You would think that they wouldn't actually care one way or the other. You know, we've been talking about this for years. Every religion is good except for Catholicism. Christianity broadly is problematic, but Catholicism is really evil. You can have a statue of a Buddha in your house or a Ganesh, and all these, we love to enthuse about traditional religions and traditional peoples, but that, of course, that has never extended to Christianity.
That's certainly never to Catholicism, because Catholicism is sort of the home base. If you have that contempt in your mind, you don't want to accept Christianity. You particularly don't want to accept Catholicism, because Catholicism is the most recognizable authoritative form of Christianity. I think there's something else going on, by the way, here too, which is Father Junipero Serra brought a Spanish culture up the coast of California to the Indians, the Native Americans there. And today, it's fashionable to think that that's a sort of form of racism.
Right.
Now, if you just look at the Hispanic societies of the Western world in contrast with our own, one of the things you notice is we have always had race problems. Mm. They haven't. There's much more racial harmony in the Western world in those countries that grew up, those societies that were most heavily influenced by Catholicism in their development.
That's a great point. The other point that I think really needs to be made, awkward though it is the fact that Hispanics themselves are the product of the intermingling, shall we say, of the Spanish and the indigenous. So the legacy of Spanish imperialism surely can't be all that bad. Are we saying that the existence of Hispanics is racist against Hispanics? The logic of the thing is completely mind-boggling. But between Saint Junipero Serra and Christopher Columbus, as you said, their only crime is spreading not only the Christian faith but yes, Christian civilization to the Americas. That's why they're hated. It has nothing to do with race.
It does. Have very little to do with race. It does also have some frightening implications, because for now, the violence has been directed at statues. There's been vandalism, there's been arson. But will it stop there? We did have the beating of some people, some Catholics in St. Louis who were praying the rosary. They were beaten by a young man. More troublesome was the incident in Florida over the weekend, where a man, apparently a very disturbed man, drove a truck into a Catholic church, set it on fire. It's sort of an inefficient means of a truck bomb.
Yeah, wow, I didn't
hear about it. He thought it was terrific, and he was not making much sense, apparently, when he was arrested, but insofar as he was making sense, it was very clear that he was aiming at a Catholic church, and it's fortunate that nobody was hurt, but it sort of looks like that was the plan. So you ask yourself, why would a disturbed individual target a Catholic church? And because he's disturbed, you don't know the thought process. But you do know what's on the news, and you do know what you're reading online. And you're reading an awful lot of contempt for Christianity and contempt for Catholicism. And that has an effect.
I don't know if you saw this, Phil. One of these big mainstream cable news channels interviewed the guy that punched that old man. It was an old man, middle-aged man, out by the statue of St. Louis. Which in itself is outrageous. The man should be in jail. You shouldn't be giving television interviews. She asked him, why did you feel the need to hit him? He wasn't provoking you in any way. And he basically, what he said was, because they don't understand anything except for violence. They won't, they won't reason with us. I thought that's absolutely ludicrous. Where has there been any violence against Black Lives Matter protesters? Even the mobs that ripped through America, burning down buildings and and beating up business owners who tried to protect their property. And then they have the audacity to say that they're doing it because we don't understand reason and because we only respond to violence. It's terrifying. And if that's the attitude that they take with Catholics, well, we've been down that road many, many times before.
Yeah, it's a way of dehumanizing people in a way to say that we won't respond to anything other than violence. That's of course an excuse for using violence, obviously.
Mm.
And I think there's an awful lot of that impulse out there. As I wrote this week, there is the brutal, crude form that you see in St. Louis with this man being beaten, but there are the subtler forms which are still regarded as respectable. For instance, the quotation that I found from Howard Dean, who's the former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and he said, and I quote, "Unfortunately, Christians don't have much a reputation for anything but hate these days." Now, accusing all Christians of hate is a way to make people hate Christians.
Yeah.
This is a form of propaganda.
Theoretically, that's 75% of the population of the United States.
Right. And this isn't, again, this isn't just,
I can't believe he lost his presidential bid, Phil.
Yeah, this is the former head of the Democratic Party nationally.
Oh.
And I'd like to say, of course, he's crazy and he's not at all representative of the Democratic Party. But I can't say that because the Democratic Party is often in line with those thoughts. You have the Democratic presidential candidate, Joe Biden, saying that he would, if he's elected, he would reverse the Supreme Court decision that gave a measure of religious freedom to the Little Sisters of the Poor. So, what could be more blatant as a show of anti-Catholic force than using government power to whip the Little Sisters of the Poor into line?
No kidding. I want to talk about that more, but you jogged my memory. I wish I had written down the title so that our readers could look it up. It's hysterical. It was a column published in the Washington Post by some novelist, and it was something like 13 signs that Trump's second term will be a fascist dictatorship. This is the Washington Post. And one of the proofs, quote unquote, that they gave was that Fox News has become effectively a propaganda machine for the Trump administration. And I don't know if anyone told this gentleman that no one's obligated to watch Fox News. They're a private corporation. The fact that they're extremely popular probably has more to do with their producers and their hosts and their marketing. And the fact that they tend to parrot a lot of Trump talking points might just be a testament to the fact that about 50% of Americans like President Trump. He did win a presidential election not too long ago. But this is the thing, for a very long time, we'll take, for instance, in the Obama administration. Under the Obama administration, all the kind of conspiracy theorist guys like Glenn Beck were saying Barack Obama is secretly a Muslim, secretly a communist, and his followers are all just dupes. Under the Trump administration, people are saying Donald Trump is a neo-Nazi. His followers know it, and they too are neo-Nazis. And this is this progressive revelation that this imminent fascist takeover is going to be aided and abetted by about half of the American people. And no wonder it's becoming violent, because they feel like, this is Weimar Germany in 1932 or whatever, the years before Hitler took over. And they think that there are actual Nazis out there who need to be beaten up in order to prevent the next Holocaust. And that's a terrifying thought, that they're so warped and so deluded that they justify these waves of violence and destruction in the name of preventing fascism. I mean, I know it's been said many, many times, but I don't know anyone that acts more like a fascist jackboot than the average Antifa member.
That's just the point, though, isn't it? That those who are complaining about the threat of fascism are the ones who are acting like fascists. Those who are complaining about intimidation tactics are the ones using intimidations. Those who are saying that they're going to be inclusive are the ones who are trying to exclude people, who invented the cancel culture. Okay. It's a testimony to the hypocrisy of the radical left that they spout slogans talking about how they're inclusive and tolerant at the same time that they do their utmost to silence their opposition by whatever means are available to them to silence the opposition.
Shocking. Why don't we circle back, though, and talk about that ruling with the Little Sisters? Because this was just decided a week or two ago. I think it was just last week. And you were away. I talked a little bit about the Catholic schools ruling in the last episode, but I wanted to save the Little Sisters for when you were back. So why don't you take that away, Phil?
Well, it was a win at the Supreme Court for the Little Sisters of the Poor. That's the good news. The bad news is it's the third time they've been hauled up to the Supreme Court in an effort to preserve their own integrity. They've had to go to the Supreme Court three times. All they want to do is give their lay employees health insurance that does not include coverage for abortion and contraception because they don't want to be supporting abortion and contraceptions with their own funds. And
it's reasonable.
Yeah, it's their choice. You don't have to work for the Little Sisters of the Poor if you don't want to. If you want to work for the Little Sisters of the Poor, the chances are pretty good that you share their outlook on life, you share their faith, and you're willing to abide by, I hope you're anxious to abide by the same principles that motivate them, the gospel of life.
Yeah.
But, and just by the way, even if you accept the notion that was promulgated during the Obama administration as part of Obamacare, you accept the notion that it's absolutely important, absolutely critical for every human being to have access to contraception.
Yeah.
You have to recognize that forcing the Little Sisters of the Poor to provide that coverage for their handful of employees just isn't a big deal. It's just not part of the crusade. So why is it that the government, the U.S. government, has been going after the Little Sisters of the Poor all these years, bringing them, as I say, to defend themselves all the way to the Supreme Court three times, and it isn't over yet, because we now have Joe Biden promising that if he's elected president, he will rescind the Trump administration policies that gave them, that gave Little Sisters of the Poor a breather, and he would force them to do what they have been refusing to do, and their case would be in the Supreme Court again. You know, it's a measure of how determined the left is, not just to enact a policy, but to stomp on the people who oppose the policy. That's what's happening here.
And they specifically want to break the will of the Catholic Church. And I you know, we kind of, or at least I do, sometimes fantasize that, you know, because we've been so overrepresented in the conservative movement, you know, people like William F. Buckley and Russell Kirk, one was a convert, one was a cradle Catholic. You know, it feels sometimes like Catholics are the intellectual sort of vanguard of, you know, of the American right, and the evangelicals might have the numbers on us, but things like this make me feel like maybe it's true, because there is just this disproportionately concerted effort to just humiliate and destroy and subjugate the Catholic Church in this country and all over the world. And but there's also, I mean, there's some good news to this. I mean, I know, I'm sure that all of our listeners have heard that, you know, President Donald Trump tweeted out the letter that was written to him by Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, praising him as a pro-life, pro-God, sort of a godly statesman, you would say. And he also, for some reason, boosted Taylor Marshall's, a recent article by Taylor Marshall. Not that, I mean, Taylor's great, but it's amazing that Donald Trump would have any sort of connection, any interest in traditionalist Catholic figures like that. He shows more interest in Catholic theology than he does in Protestant theology, and he's a lifelong Presbyterian.
Well, I suppose it serves his political purposes. And I think this
that's
is
the,
one
that's
of the,
important.
It's certainly important to Trump.
Yeah. It shows it does, but it does show, I think, that, you know, as Catholics, we bring a lot more to the table than our numbers would suggest, especially considering that 2/3 of Catholics don't even believe in the real presence of God in the Eucharist. So, you know, it's actually even a much smaller number than just the 24% I think that's usually given. But I'm sure that besides the truly demonic element, the powers of this world constantly for the last 2,000 years trying to destroy the Catholic Church, I think the fact that we really do punch above our weight is part of the reason that people like Joe Biden are just so determined to humiliate, ritually humiliate these nuns in the courts.
I suppose so, but it's a strange thing because one of the reasons we punch above our weight politically is that everybody knows that Catholics in the last several elections have been a sort of swing vote. Now, you can get a bit more sophisticated and notice that the Catholics who go to church on a regular basis are not swing voters, but Catholics generally taken en masse are swing voters. They're up for grabs. And if you are trying to capture the Catholic vote, more specifically the vote of let's say lukewarm or lapsed Catholics, who are the ones who are generally undecided, uncommitted. It's horrible, as they say, optics. It's horrible optics to be going after the Little Sisters of the Poor. It looks like bullying, and the reason it looks like bullying is because it is bullying. So why would you do that? To me, it suggests the sort of desperation of the liberal movement, the radical left, that they don't know what's good for them. It just can't be good politics, and yet they keep doing it.
Yeah, they're not going after the Catholic vote. They're going after the anti-Catholic vote. But by the same
time, maybe part of the story is that we are now so divided as Catholics that the anti-Catholic vote includes a whole lot of people who call themselves Catholics. And the evidence for that is right before you in Washington, because the people like Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi continue to call themselves Catholics while they pursue policies that are completely inimical to the Catholic faith.
I'm a little ambivalent about the concept of the Catholic vote, because Catholics are actually the most, how would you say, representative voters. They follow the sort of the mean party affiliation more closely than any other religion. I should say we. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the majority of people who identify themselves as Catholics vote for Joe Biden in the 2020 election, and that might be what puts him over the edge. But as you said, I mean, that would mean that Catholics are voting on a fundamentally anti-Catholic ticket. That is that they're part of the purpose of voting for this quote, this supposed Catholic politician, is precisely to help break the back of the church. And that is, again, very, very frightening.
It is. Well, as you know, Michael, 20 years ago, I was running for office myself.
Yeah.
And when it was over and I was fairly thoroughly trounced by a putative Catholic, Ted Kennedy, the late Ted Kennedy, I said to myself, okay, I'm going to get out of politics. Because this, to me, the lesson that I learned from that experience is that we have to clear up the confusion within our own faith before we as Catholics can hope to clear up the confusion in our society. As long as the church, as long as the voice of the Catholic community is ambivalent, we can't really expect to be transforming the culture the way we should.
That's a great point, Phil. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this week. But I thank you all for tuning in. I hope you'll do so again next Friday. Until then, I am Michael Warren Davis. He is Philip F. Lawler. And this is The Crisis Point. Thank you all for joining us. Speak to you soon, and God bless you.